our feet, keep us grounded, take us where we need to go, and keep us active. So what's the best way to keep our feet fit? Today we're talking foot care with Dr. Nathan Ullum, Doctor of Podiatric Medicine at Skagit Regional Health. Welcome to Be Well, the podcast from Skagit Regional Health. I'm Amanda Wild. Dr. Ullum, great to have you here. Our feet keep us mobile, but they certainly take a lot of punishment. What kind of foot problems do you see in your practice?
Well, thank you for the introduction. So this time of year, we start to see a lot of, you know, a lot of variation amongst the issues that are coming in to be seen. Mostly, though, it comes from overuse injuries. As the weather starts to get nice, people get out and start to do more and be more active. I know here in the Pacific Northwest, we all cherish our very short, nice weather season. So as people get out and start to increase their activity level, often our office will get filled with patients that are coming in with just new onset foot pain, primarily heel pain.
Oh, and what is that from?
Well, what happens is people get out and start to be more active is that the tissues that have tensioned up over the time of inactivity or winter around here, you know, start to get stretched out and see some new trauma.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the ways to alleviate that kind of heel pain that you're talking about?
Well, generalized heel pain is typically, and the most common thing we see, I should say, is what's called as plantar fasciitis. Plantar fasciitis is inflammation of the plantar fascia band. That's a band of tissue that arises from your heel bone and inserts into your forefoot or the ball of your foot. This band of tissue's job is to keep tension on your arch to help support your arch and help propel you forward when you're walking. What will happen is people are inactive as we will see tension build up through their calf muscle and change the way that they walk in order to cause their foot to flatten out more when walking. What happens during this with this issue is as the foot flattens or pronates, that band of tissue, your plantar fascia band, will be placed under tension, tearing away or pulling away from the heel bone where it originates. This causes lots of swelling and ultimately leads to pretty severe discomfort.
And I've had that, and I know lots of people have. And when I got it, I didn't know what it was or anything about it. And friends told me, yeah, it just takes a really long time to go away. That's basically what I heard. But what are some other things we can do to help it along?
So plantar fasciitis is extremely common. And as you said, you've had it, and I'm sure most people listening to this podcast know somebody that has if they haven't had it themselves. You know, I think one common misconception is that it takes a long time to get better. That's simply not always the case. The most common cause of plantar fasciitis is an issue known as an equinus contracture, or that means a tight calf muscle, right? When the mm-hmm. calf muscle tightens up, as I mentioned previously, it changes the way we walk to force your foot into what's known as pronation or flattening of your arch, putting that band of tissue under tension. The simplest treatment to get rid of plantar fasciitis, and what I find works about 9 times out of 10, is simply focusing on aggressive stretching of your calf muscle, along with possibly some support in your shoe.
What kind of stretching should you be doing?
Well, focusing on stretching the two muscles that make up your calf muscle is very important. The two muscles are known as your soleus muscle, which is the muscle that makes up the bulk of your calf, and your gastrocnemius muscle, which is the muscle that arises from behind your knee. When having heel pain, we find that the vast majority of patients suffer from tension within their gastrocnemius muscle. This is a very important distinction. What happens is when patients start to stretch in order to alleviate their foot pain, oftentimes they're doing it incorrectly. When you are stretching your calf muscle, it is extremely important that you keep your knee locked straight and your leg in a fixed, straightened position in order to ensure that your gastrocnemius muscle is engaged. If you allow your knee to bend while stretching that calf muscle, you'll find that the gastrocnemius muscle is then slacked and that you're not effectively stretching it. Otherwise, you know, I tell my patients quite often that they're just wasting their time. So what I like to see is stretching of up to 4 or 5 times a day. Usually I tell patients to do it in a seated or laying down position, take a towel, loop it around the bottom of their foot, and pull their foot upwards in order to dorsiflex their ankle and stretch that calf muscle. They should feel tension on the upper portion of their calf muscle and slightly behind their knee. That's how you know it's working well. Typically, I recommend patients stretch for 30 to 60 seconds at a time and do both legs, even if the other side isn't hurting.
And what about doing stretching before activity?
That's absolutely imperative. So naturally, you know, our calf muscle strengthens with just normal daily walking, right? If we think about how our leg functions, the muscles in the back of your leg get very, very strong naturally because they have to lift your body weight with every single step you take. The muscles in the front of your leg, on the other hand, only have to lift the weight of your foot. So we typically we'll form this Aquinas contracture from no fault of our own other than just lack of stretching. Stretching before you're active is extremely important to help, you know, loosen up the tendons and the musculotendinous junction as well as the tendon-bone connection in order to alleviate excessive tension in those areas that can result in injury.
Now, if we have developed a problem that we're trying to resolve through stretching, what about also foot massages, or even, I don't really know about this, but there's something called reflexology that works with your feet. What are your thoughts on those?
So as far as foot massage, I always tell my patients that that's a very good way to help disperse or spread out the swelling that's in the area, and it feels good. You know, I find that a common mistake patients make is they focus solely on massaging, right? Because again, it feels good and doesn't really require a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of effort on their part. So what I recommend, you know, typically is to focus on the stretching. We don't need to get fancy with it. If we focus on stretching those calf muscles, that typical heel pain almost always resolves within, say, 4 to 6 weeks for most patients.
So this stretching really helps keep your feet healthy and strong, as well as help when you have injuries.
Yeah, one thing that I like to reiterate with patients is that, you know, our bodies in general are a very complex, you know, mechanism made up of, you know, pulleys and joints, essentially. In our feet alone, there's 26 bones in each foot and 33 joints in each foot. And oftentimes, you know, our anatomy is such that, those joints and bones are not aligned optimally. Thus, when we end up having soft tissue tension or having muscles that are out of balance and too strong or too weak, it changes the way we walk to cause those joints and bones to become misaligned even more. Over time, even a mild misalignment of any of those joints can lead to arthritis. And arthritis, as we know, can lead to pretty significant discomfort.
And even lack of mobility.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So, you know, I find that, you know, encouraging stretching among my patients, and when they buy into that treatment plan and are aggressive in their stretching protocol and maintain flexibility throughout their lower extremity, those patients tend to do very, very well and rarely have recurrent overuse injuries.
Great. What other tips can you offer to maintain healthy feet?
Supportive shoe insoles is also something that can be very helpful for a large portion of the population. Most patients that present for evaluation will have a flexible foot, meaning that when they stand up, their arch height often can collapse. Sometimes this happens to be just a very mild amount. Sometimes it's pretty dramatic, causing their arch to collapse all the way to the floor. Right? These patients generally will benefit from supportive insoles in their shoes. One common mistake people make is that when seeking out supportive insoles, they kind of go through the same process as we do when we're purchasing shoe gear, right? When we're purchasing shoe gear, there's really only two things that matter to most people. The first is always whether or not they like the look of or style of the shoe, mm-hmm. right? And
Absolutely.
The second is how does that shoe feel for the first 5 seconds that you put it on, right? If that shoe is uncomfortable when you put it on that first 5 seconds, you immediately disregard that shoe and go on to purchase something else, right? A good supportive insole often does not work that way, right? Your foot gets very used to being hypermobile or flexible, and placing some supportive insert in your shoe is going to change the way it feels and the way that you walk. That's the entire intention of using them. So oftentimes, when breaking in a good supportive insole, it can take quite a while. It can take, you know, a month or 6 weeks or more. I recommend to my patients that when purchasing insoles, we look for something rigid. So we want something that's not made out of foam or anything soft or bendable. If you can take your thumb and put it on the arch and collapse it down, that insert is really not going to be doing much for you because your body weight tends to push right through that support, right? So we're looking for something that's made out of a nice rigid plastic or some similar material, it can have a nice soft top cover on it to make it a little more comfortable to stand on, but the functional portion of the device needs to be rigid. When breaking in that insert, I make sure that my patients understand that that's going to be a slow process, and I encourage them to do that in a stepwise fashion, typically starting with as little as a half an hour to an hour the first day and increasing it every single day. I encourage them not to fight through discomfort. I think one of the big mistakes that patients make when they're breaking in these inserts is try and force it. You know, we all try and act tough and try and continue to wear the inserts until they no longer hurt and fight through the discomfort that they're causing. And ultimately, this leads to it getting worse and worse and worse until we quit. Right? Mm-hmm. I like to remind my patients to do this very slowly and be patient with it. And when they bother them, to take them out of their shoes and try again the next day. Right?
So it can feel really peculiar at first.
Absolutely. So when putting a new insert in your shoe, it just feels awkward. And, you know, you're not used to it. It's going to be challenging. And so, you know, I think the slow way of breaking them in is the best way.
I'm surprised to hear about the rigid material. I'm thinking about what I know of soles of shoes, but I've never been clear on this, so I wanted to ask you, because I've heard both that you should have flexible soles or you should have rigid soles, or maybe it depends on what your job is. I used to do a lot of standing, and I was told, no, rigid soles are good for that, these shoes that we think of as nurses' shoes. But then I realized, but those aren't good for walking. They're good for standing. So what's your take on that?
I think this is very challenging to give kind of a one-size-fits-all answer, right? You know, there are different foot types, and different shoe gear is going to be appropriate for patients with different foot types, right? The two main types of feet are either flexible or rigid, right? Patients with rigid feet, meaning feet whose bone structure is very solid in its makeup and does not have a lot of excessive motion, meaning when they stand up, it doesn't collapse, right? These patients tend to have high arched feet and things of that nature. These patients do well basically regardless of what type of shoe you put them in, and oftentimes a minimal shoe or a shoe that will move with the way their foot wants to move works just fine, right? Patients that have a highly flexible foot, in my experience, as long as they are flexible themselves, meaning that they have good muscle balance and no tension in their calf muscles, those patients also tend to do well in whatever type of shoe they want to use, as long as they have a supportive insole in that shoe. I find that when we have patients with an equinus contracture, meaning a tight calf muscle or very poor muscle balance, those patients do not do very well at all in a shoe that will move with their foot, rather would benefit from more significant support. I think most podiatrists are going to recommend a shoe that does not have too much bend in it, that is not highly flexible, not too firm either, unless there are other specific ailments going on. But you want something that's firm enough that's going to hold up to the, you know, rigors of walking on the street and things of that nature.
Right. So it also depends on the individual. But stretching daily works for everyone, right?
Everybody. Right. Yeah, absolutely everybody. So stretching daily is, in my opinion, is the most important thing that you can do to maintain good lower extremity health and maintain the functionality of your feet and legs.
Dr. Olam, thanks for sharing your expertise and walking us through the steps we can take to foot health.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
To learn more, visit skagitregionalhealth.org. And thanks for listening to Be Well, the podcast from Skagit Regional Health. If you found this conversation helpful, please share it on your social channels and check out the full podcast library. I'm Amanda Wild, and we'll talk again next time.